It's like Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:20 p.m. and that is Central Time today, September 20th. I thought we'd kick off with the total return on high yield debt, that is. So we're up rather significantly and approaching 10% yields. Over the course of the last decade, 10% yields on a total return basis have been areas of support for high yield bonds. So obviously investors are starting to think about what is going to be required in order to put a bottom in. So the big question, of course, I think on many people's minds is this going to be something like 2008, or are we going to see something like 2001? And maybe we could go back a little bit more in history and then think about where yields were back then. Because obviously interest rates were quite a bit higher in 2008, and they were quite a bit higher in 1999. So they're only starting to rise now, and bond yields are already, or bond spreads, I should say, are already well on the way towards these very significant numbers. So obviously then it begs questions. What is it that's going to require, or what do we need to see before the Federal Reserve will actually pivot? Because the Fed funds rate is probably going to jump by another 75 basis points tomorrow. So when we just look at the 3 month yield, that's pretty much priced in now. And bond investors are really exceptionally pressured. So this is the 3 month yield, but it's just almost at now 3.25, and the Fed funds rate will be at 3.25 tomorrow. So then we still have this compression of yields at the front end of the curve and rising yields at the long end of the curve. And it's the only way that a bond investor can preserve their purchasing power is to stay away from the long end of the curve because it's most acutely susceptible to inflationary pressures, and the 10-year yield is breaking on the upside. So it's pushing above the 3.5% level in here today. So this is a breakout, and we're going to have to see a clear downward dynamic in order to really confirm that we're not seeing an extension of this bearish trend in bond prices. We're also at yields that haven't been seen since 2011. So this is a significant change. When we think then about the extent of the acceleration that we've seen in the UK, well, the gilt yield is surging and it's up to 3.29% now. And this has been a really quite profound move. And we have Liz Truss, who's just taken power, and she's made huge promises about spending. So the answer to the country's problems apparently is spend, spend, spend. But how that is going to get control of inflation is beyond my comprehension. The reality is, and it's well understood, that central banks can't do it alone. They need the fiscal authorities to also rein in spending. And if they don't do that, inflation is not going to be brought under control. So the long end of the curve is deeply susceptible to inflation. It's also where the majority of the UK's debt is concentrated. The UK has got longer dated government bonds than just are on or an average duration for government bonds than just about anywhere else. So that's obviously then also focusing attention on the longer end of the curve. And the pound is trending downwards. It's not just falling against the dollar, it's also deteriorating against the euro and down to 113 right now. So this is still a trending environment, and there's no sign of support beyond very short-term steadying for at least the moment. But the reality is that a declining currency generally is supportive for competitiveness within the economy. Now, obviously, there are significant challenges ahead, and Nobody really knows how cold the winter is going to be. And obviously, there's a huge appetite right now for dystopian views. And thinking that the world is going to run out of food, that we're going to have a massive energy crisis, and also that everyone is going to freeze in their homes. So, well, one thing is possible. It's that we might have a mild winter. You never know. And that would certainly ameliorate some of the positions. But the other thing that I think is especially relevant right now is when we look at the agricultural commodities, wheat prices pulled back exceptionally violently. Now they're starting to steady. So this is supportive of the view that perhaps we're going to see a higher base and that prices will be holding between about 8 and 1200. And corn has also pulled back in a violent manner, but is also beginning to offer some evidence of support building. And when we think then about why that might be, well, it's because natural gas prices are still really quite steady, and they haven't been pulling back through the $8 level. And in the US, they're still holding around the, or excuse me, they have pulled back through the $8 level. They haven't broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. And the big question is, when Europe starts dipping into their reserves, are they going to be forced to come back into the market and start buying natural gas with alacrity? So the Dutch natural gas price was a little steadier in here today. Now, I suspect that we're going to have an enormous amount of volatility because there's a physical limitation on how much they can store. If we have a cold winter, then the storage is going to start running down quickly and they'll need to run to fill it up again. So that means there'll be a lot of volatility where there'll be surges in demand and then prices will come back down. But then there's also going to be floating regasification units coming up in Europe. Golar has installed one already in the Netherlands, and they have them in Spain. Accelerate expects to have three up and running in Albania, Finland, and Germany within the next 18 months. I think the one in Albania is already there. But just those three alone would represent 15 billion cubic feet of, or cubic meters of capacity per annum, and 10% of all of Europe's gas consumption. So we're really talking about really processing liquefied natural gas on an epic proportion when these regasification units go into effect. And considering the quantity of cash that's being brought to bear, well, obviously we're seeing the negative effects of it in the bond markets. And money is being spent on a war footing. And there's no question, Europe is at war. This is an energy war. And they are spending now to resist the basically being held hostage by Russia on the energy front. And that's, I don't think, going to change. And Europe has got financial resources at its disposal that it can bring to bear. So obviously, the euro, the pound remain under pressure. This is the negative side of that. But it doesn't mean that the money that's being spent is being spent with no effect. And solutions are being put in place. So there's a lot of, there's a clear temptation to think that the most dystopian possible solution is the most likely. But we don't have a lot of evidence to suggest that that is ever really going to be the case. And Brent crude is not surging higher. One of the things that a lot of people are fearful of is that Brent crude will surge through to new all-time highs and potentially even double from where it is right now. But the charts don't support that, at least not yet. And prices are still consolidating and coming back into this $80 area. Now, there's obviously the clear potential that $80 might be a new floor because the Biden administration is starting to talk about buying oil at $80 for the strategic reserve. And that seems to be a rather high floor. So then that should help to support prices. When we then think about some of these energy producers, well, Exxon is still holding on here around the $90 area. Conoco, sorry, that's not the right. Sorry, let me just put up Chevron, excuse me, where the price is also steadying in the region of the 200-day moving average. I think they're pricing in the potential that we could be looking at a higher floor overall. And of course, we should remember that the USA is now an energy exporter. So they have more of an interest in supporting prices rather than seeing prices collapse just on a purely selfish geopolitical perspective. Now let's think about what all this means for stock markets. What is it, just go back to the original question, what needs to happen for the Federal Reserve to pivot? Well, we know that high yield total return is back in the region of where we've seen peaks in the past. And the Nasdaq is right in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And if we're still in a secular bull market, then we'll see a pivot soon. I doubt we'll see it tomorrow, but we might see it in November, or we might see it in December. But that would necessarily imply that inflationary pressures start to moderate. So rents have been exceptionally high, and they're likely to continue higher if bond yields continue higher. One thing in the property market is that prices are coming down, but the number of transactions is also coming down, and people are simply deciding not to move. Anyone who has taken out a mortgage before 2022, well, then they're going to find it rather expensive to move. Now, of course, if they have a huge profit on their property, then they might just simply be able to buy without borrowing. But not everyone is in that position. What it suggests is that we're going to see a lot less activity in housing. And if that's the case, then the rental property market is going to be waiting for new supply to come to market to ameliorate some of the price pressures. So that would certainly help to bring down inflationary pressures. It's a major component of the core CPI. Gasoline prices are starting to come down, but that's not a core factor. But the most important thing is that demand in the economy needs to moderate. And if unemployment were to begin to rise, well, that would be a clear catalyst for the Federal Reserve to start easing up. And then that might be a reason to start jumping back into the stock market because it would bring forward the time when interest rates might actually start to be cut. But because high yield spreads are trending higher, the high yield is at 10% on a total return basis, and then the Nasdaq is in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, then people are expecting to see a pivot now. And they are still very wedded to a buy the dip scenario. But I do think that we're in a very different environment now. Everyone was fearful of inflation in 2010, 11, 12, and it never manifested. Well, after massive monetary and fiscal stimulus during the pandemic, now we have inflation. And if central banks don't have the willingness to take near-term pain to secure a steady future, then inflation is going to be deeply entrenched. And We can think about the fact that the equity markets are at an area of support, but perhaps we should also be looking at gold, because gold has broken back below the 1,000-day moving average. Now, it doesn't have nearly the same long-term consistency of finding support in the region of that level, but more importantly, it has broken down to new reaction lows and is breaking down from this more than 2-year range. And gold does best in a negative real interest rate environment, and it does best in a weak dollar environment. And right now, the negative real interest rate environment is becoming less negative, and the dollar remains exceptionally firm. And until we see the dollar rolling over, and I think it is particularly relevant that the dollar was very quiet for the last 4 or 5 days and then popped on the upside in here today. So this still looks like a consolidation, and there's clear potential for additional upside. The Japanese yen also continues to trend lower, and there's no real sign that the Bank of Japan has got any notion of going in and actively supporting the currency. Now let's also think about one of the other major sources of deflation out there, and that's China. The CSI 300 is still trending downwards. Now there are hundreds of electric vehicle companies in China, and they're not all going to survive. There's measures underway to try and support the property market, and they've set up new bond issuance programs for the property sector within China. So that's a positive. It means that not every one of the property developers is going to go bust, but some of them will. And there's a huge amount of outstanding debt. Now, there are obviously plans underway to try and build a lot of the apartment buildings that have already been paid for by consumers. But that's not going to be enough. The debt of those companies is going to have to be managed, and that's going to require an awful lot of money, and China is going to have to stimulate. So they've expressed a great reticence to do that so far, but with the COVID zero question still outstanding, then it necessitates that money be spent. And that is also showing up in the currency. So the renminbi continues to trend lower, and the dollar is now trading above 7. So there's certainly potential for a retest of the dollar's peaks from back in 2019 and 20, but we may not see it stop there. The quantity of money required to support asset prices in China is epic in proportion. So it has been the one country that avoided inflation because they didn't need to print during the pandemic, when demand everywhere else created outsized demand on their manufacturing potential. So China didn't need stimulus because it benefited from stimulus everywhere else. Now they're going to have to provide their own. And that's going to take pressure, or put pressure on the currency. So the dollar continues to trend higher, and this is continuing to price in the potential for outsized interest rate hikes. If that's indeed the case, then it's unlikely that the 10-year, excuse me, the 10% level on the total return for high yield or the 1,000-day moving average for the Nasdaq are going to hold. We might easily see the Nasdaq breaking downwards as a result of tightening beyond where we are right now, because we are at this critical juncture. If the Fed were to pivot now, then I think there'd be a rush of money back into the market. But it's specifically because there's such a strong willingness to buy the dip that they are less likely to intervene. And Bitcoin was down another $500 in here today. So closing now for another day below the psychological 20,000 level. And this is a liquidity barometer. And if prices are going down, then it is implying that liquidity conditions are tightening. Now, we've had this huge change in how Ethereum is structured, but the price is also going down. There's a lot of money pouring into the sector. There's a lot of exceptionally smart people devoting a great deal of time to building out networks and protocols. They're going to have some kind of marketable product that has a real-world use case at some stage. But that has nothing to do with the value of the tokens. The tokens are all about liquidity. And when liquidity is tightening, prices go down. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.